Managers Hub, episode 9, coming to you from Folkestone in Kent. I'm Ray.
I'm Gary.
I'm Sophie.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome, guys. Lovely to have you here in the Hub. As you can hear, folks, we've got a new voice here with us, and we'd like to introduce you to Sophie Bryan. Sophie, can you give us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, thank you for welcoming me to the podcast. Okay, so for the past 17 years, I have worked within human resources, organisation development, leadership, culture change. And after about 4 years of working in a director capacity within a social housing organisation, I decided to start my own business, which is Ordinarily Different. And that is a culture change organisation that helps organisations put the wow into work. And wow has quite a significant meaning for me, in so much as the first W stands for willingness. So helping organisations really motivate and engage their staff so that they're willing to give the best they possibly can in the organisation. And the O is for optimisation, which is really around performance, optimising actually people's strengths, using coaching-based methods to enable people to be the best they can possibly be, and thinking about your leadership style in that capacity as well in terms of optimization. And the W again is around well-being, because I think it's a big part of organisations that we don't really talk about much, and not a lot is being done around it other than a few kind of healthy working weeks. Well-being should be part of organisations' culture. So these are kind of the three facets that I concentrate on now, and certainly within my background of working within the private sector and the public sector, within a coaching capacity and leadership capacity, that kind of is what brings me to be part of this Leaders and Managers Hub, really.
Wonderful, and we're very lucky to have you, and I know that you're going to inspire us and engage us and challenge us, and it's going to be really, really good. How can people contact you?
You can contact me at www.ordinarilydifferent.co.uk or Sophie at ordinarilydifferent.co.uk.
Are you on the Twitter or the...
I'm on all of them, but the best one is LinkedIn. So check me out on there, Sophie Bryan, B-R-Y-A-N.
Thank you, Sophie, and welcome to the show. So, folks, our first topic we're going to talk about is one-on-ones. What are they? What are they about? How do they fit into the manager's toolbox? How do we think that they should be codified and rolled out? Your thoughts, please. So I'll kick it off, just because I wrote the notes. I use one-to-ones as a means of creating a relationship with the people I work with or who work for me, either as a direct line manager or as a project report or whatever. And the way I use them is it's entirely outside of anything to do with performance. It's a weekly conversation, which is 10 minutes for them to talk to me about anything that they want to, 10 minutes for me to talk about anything that I want to, and then 10 minutes to talk about the future, which tends to be a little bit more work orientated. And for me, the reason I do it is because it gives me an opportunity to engage with the individual on a non-work basis, to try to understand what their particular personal projects are, what their particular pressures are, and to gauge where they are in any given week, so that they know that we can build that relationship up, so that they know that they can talk to me if there are any issues. And if I perceive any issues, I'm able to talk to them because we've started to build that relationship. It's not just a standoffish, hierarchical relationship. And I have to say they work very well for me. I don't always do them face-to-face because that's not humanly possible. So we do them over the phone. They're diarized every week. And of all of the things that I have in my diary, those are the things that are the last to ever get compromised in terms of having to move, because that is my relationship with my people or the people of the client that I'm particularly working for at the time. But that's just my idea and method. Over to you guys, one-on-ones.
I don't know, my experience has been varied. So in journalism, one-to-ones almost non-existent. You just you just get into your job and then you just get on with it. Don't think I ever had an appraisal or any form of regular one-to-one. In education, it was more of a supervision style approach, because it was a mentoring program and you've got a team of mentors that you're managing. So as part of that, you have to have some regular what they call supervision meetings. So again, that's just checking progress, but also, again, you know, seeing how people are doing and any issues or challenges they've got, either generally or with particular students. And then, I say, because most of my life has been sort of freelance, the only one-to-ones are with myself, so you know, and I do talk to myself, so that's so they are quite constructive conversations, but on a serious note,
it's when you start talking back to yourself, Gary.
Yeah, that is the problem. But yeah, in general, that's been my experience. And yeah, I think probably in business most people would say that's how they've experienced it, either with an annual appraisal or through some form of supervision.
Much more sort of performance-based type thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I would echo that of Gary's experience in terms of, as a previous HR director, I was often setting the scene for appraisal, setting the scene for one-to-ones, and quite often they were supervision meetings. Quite often they were very heavily focused on performance, not a lot about the individual, which is where I think Ray was coming from. And equally, they were, to a certain extent, almost forced. It was a regular cyclical, you have to do, here's a tick box, here's a checklist of what you need to speak about. Not much of it was organic. It wasn't a free-flowing conversation. It was a, you have to talk about these things, you have to evidence this, you need to talk about KPIs, you need to make sure this person's performing. But what I find refreshing about how Ray's describing them is actually it's more about the person at the end of that performance rather than the doing of the performance.
Yeah, because like there's absolutely time and place for performance conversations. But I think in my experience, so for example, let me tell you that I've never worked with an organization that had formalized one-to-ones in any way, shape or form. They all had the sort of standard model of annual appraisals and then sort of quarterly check-ins and to measure and that sort of thing. But they didn't particularly value the relationship side of leadership and management. And what I mean by that is, so if I'm talking to somebody regularly, weekly, in a setting where we build up a level of trust and relationship where we're able to talk about things, and I'm not expecting people to divulge all their secrets to me or anything, but we establish that relationship where we're able to have those conversations. When it comes to performance on any given thing, it's much easier, I find it much easier, to then appreciate perhaps if somebody on a particular day performs out a character, actually easier to kind of understand where that's going, where that's come from. But also it's then also easier to take that person aside in a feedback style thing and have a conversation with them and say, hey, what's going on here? This is the behavior I've seen. This isn't really like you. Come on, let's have a conversation and try and understand what's going on and what can we do to support you in through whatever it is. And I'm always surprised. I shouldn't be, because I've lived it for 28 years. But I'm always a little bit shocked about how little importance managers and organizations put on having those relationships with their people. I've even had managers say to me, I haven't got time. I haven't got time to get to know my people. What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
So what, are you just going to like have them regularly serviced by the maintenance crew and put back into operation? Like, these aren't machines, these are human beings. And if you want to get the best out of people, you have to be able to have that relationship. And for me, one-on-ones are just one particular tool to enable me to do that.
Mm. For me, I think they should now be in this day and age, because we're moving away from the kind of the more industrial style of command and control of leadership. They should be more about coaching sessions. It should be more about asking really curious questions about the individual that you're talking to, around how they're feeling, how are they operating in their work environment, what's behind how they're showing up at work, rather than it almost being a performance management conversation. And I think coaching is the key thing here. I think one-to-ones need to shift to being more coaching based rather than it being anything other than that.
Yeah, because there's other formal tools for performance management and appraisals and 360s and all that sort of thing. and absolutely, you need to have those as well, because if you have career pathways for people, if you've got a business sustainability plan of which the progression of your people is part of that and part of the business resilience, that has to be formalized and codified in some way. But these are, for me, these are slightly outside of that, in that this is more about the relationship and under certain circumstances, maybe an early intervention type opportunity if somebody is struggling or if there is a performance issue, rather than going straight into a formal performance management process, that you're actually, you've built the relationship up with your team to have that level of conversation.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with it being more about coaching, because I had 12 years of really traditional appraisal when I worked in education. So I was in marketing, so it was a little bit different to any kind of teaching. But we had a really formal system, and that was once a year. We had a load of paperwork we had to prepare for. We also had to appraise our bosses for their appraisal as well, which was really good. So we had to, part of their appraisal was to ask us questions. So we appraised them as a boss, which went further. And that was very performance driven. It always kind of reviewed, went through your kind of key roles in your job, and you always had to kind of mark against it with a scoring system and talk about what had gone really well and what hadn't. And so there was some development there, but there was always an element of talking about any training that was needed. I think one of the things I've talked to lots of people about in the last few years through working was, it's the train, when it comes to training, it's also about funding training that may not be directly work related, but the impact that can have on a person. So whereas traditionally it would be, right, you need training in this, so we'll pay for it. But there's a couple now that are starting to change, and they'll actually fund training in all sorts of stuff. And it isn't necessarily directly related to their work, but what it does for them as a person really has a good impact on how they are. So I think that's something that probably needs to change a bit more as well. For me now, it's far more about the position I'm in managing the workshop is the one-to-ones that I have with my tenants and building those relationships. So it's not really work-related, but it's still building that trust with them and having openness and feeling that they can come to me if things are struggling, which is key for some of them sometimes, but also for me to be able to find out how else I can help them in their businesses as well.
I mean, like I with the thing on one-on-ones, for me it's at the heart of how an organization is. If you consider your people, your human resources, to be a commodity, and therefore you're not really, there's no emphasis on the empathy side of leadership, and you're not really interested in getting to know them as people, you just want them to come in and perform a role, that's fine if that's the culture of your organization. And I think for me, how people do or do not approach one-on-ones tells me a lot more about the organization and about the individual manager than anything else that they could tell me. Because for me, it separates out the difference between somebody who sees and values the human element of their human resources and those that sort of just treat them almost like, see them almost as a commodity.
I do a lot of work around organisations culture. and the extent to which one-to-ones are part of the organisation's culture, and then the way they do those one-to-ones forms quite a significant part of how I feel about that organisation, and then how I think they need to perhaps shift, become perhaps more modern in their approach. And I find the organisations that you're describing there, Ray, the ones that are very kind of prescriptive around staff are just almost a number, their employee number 176, then they will probably tend to have that more transactional relationship. But what we want from one-to-ones is transformational relationships, not transactional. And I think going back to the whole coaching piece, the organisations that have more of a coaching culture, where they're more curious, they tend to ask a lot more questions, and actually people are welcome to ask more questions, those one-to-ones take a very different steer and become more transformational. So I've spoken a lot at conferences around the importance of coaching as a coaching culture in one-to-ones, in performance management, going back to development in terms of training that people have, to bring into what Lisa was saying. And if there's something useful I can offer the listeners to this podcast, it's a group of 7 questions that I've certainly used in my one-to-ones in the past, and I continue to kind of share with the organisations that I work with. And they come from a guy called Michael Bungay Stanier, who has a book called The Coaching Habit. And he advocates these 7 questions, which I think perfectly in a one-to-one scenario. And it's, what is on your mind? Which could be, going back to what Ray was saying, it could be about the individual's personal life. It could be something that's going on external to the organisation. What else? Because there's often more than one thing, and quite often we need that space to be able to air that. What is the real challenge here for you? What's troubling you about this situation? What do you need, or what do you want? And again, if I was to offer that to a member of staff and they could say to me, actually, what I really need from you right now, what I really need from the organisation right now, what I really need for myself right now is, I think that gives quite a fruitful answer in terms of where you might need to steer the conversation. How can I or we as the organisation help you? If you are saying yes to this, what are you saying no to? It's quite often we are in a position of compromise, aren't we? If I agree to do this, something's going to drop over there. We are always working in this position of constantly being challenged. And I think it's good to challenge people in those conversations, whether it's from a personal perspective or it's in a professional perspective. And then finally, it's a reflective question to see how useful you have shown up in the one-to-one. And that is, what was most useful for you? So there's a self-reflection on the individual who's holding that one-to-one. Tell me what's worked for you as part of this conversation. If this hasn't been a useful conversation, tell me why. How can I help you further? What do I need to change? So actually, the one-to-one is almost a two-way discussion around how is the individual showing up, but how am I showing up as the leader as well?
And it should be two-way. I think it's got to be that. I think any one-to-one has to have a clear purpose, and it should be driven not just as a tick box exercise to say, right, yeah, we've had a chat with X and Y and Z, and you know, this is what we've got. And I think, as you say, those open style of questions allow people to start expressing, you know, what they're feeling, what's going on, stuff which might otherwise not come out. And if you're not aware of it, then you don't know, well, why is somebody not quite doing as well as they're doing, or you know what, you know, someone seems troubled but nobody's bothered to ask, but that's might be where it's from. So.
I quite like, sorry, that they're not too, you don't have to prepare too much for them. Well, you can't necessarily prepare for those questions. I think the trouble with some systems that I've been part of, you get all this paperwork 2 weeks before that they want in 3 days before so they can read it all, and it's quite a closed off conversation sometimes, whereas I think those questions, it totally opens up what you can end up discussing. I like that.
Just because you both Lisa and Sophie have mentioned it about training and coaching, if your leadership style, if you see yourself as a servant leader, then that kind of dictates how you would take on your one-to-ones, because you're looking as a leader to understand what it is that you can do for that individual so that you can get the best performance out of them to meet whatever the organizational objectives are. And I think that thankfully we've come to the realization now that you have to look after the whole of the person, because if you want people to leave their troubles out in the car park before they walk over the threshold of the workplace, then actually what you're asking them to do is actually also leave their emotions and their creativity and everything else outside in the car park. And that doesn't make for a happy, fulfilled and engaged and inspired employee. So purely as a means of just understanding how can I as a leader do better for you so that you can do better for us is worth the conversation for me in and of itself. Gary, you mentioned about outcomes. So for you, what do you see as the outcomes that should come out of one-to-ones?
I think you want feedback, and that's, again, it's sort of two-way. I would want, part of that should be clarity, so it's like I have a better understanding of what's going on and how things are going for this person, but also, you know, if it is involving anything related to performance, then again that's there's some clarity around that. So I think it's again, so the purpose for me is that it's almost like not quite fact finding, but it's kind of checking in, you know, in an open way, rather than a, you know, we have to get through, you know, 20 questions, or we have to you know, tick this box around training. So you can't just say I don't want any training right now. You have to say you want some, because that's what the company says. So it needs to be for a clear purpose, and yes, it's all going to be related to the, you know, the success of the company, but I think that comes from your, you know, your organisation, your culture, your values, and what you're actually looking for, and how you, you know, work with your people, really.
And Lisa, for you, in terms of, because your situation is slightly different to mine, so I'm interested to understand, you would have sort of one-to-one style conversations with your tenants.
Yeah, it's a different one. I think, especially since sort of competition's increased a little bit, and it's not just about that, but it is just wanting to, it's start the very basic, when I started the job back in October, was to understand what their businesses are and what they're doing. And I'm done quite a lot of networking, so those sort of questions, I'm just interested to know what people are up to, but also if I can help sort of within the building and all the other offices, be able to recommend other tenants. So if they sort of say they're having a certain issue, it's like, oh, why don't you talk to so and so, because actually a lot of them in there don't know who else is in the building, because they get stuck in their office and don't leave it. So we're trying to encourage more of that. But if I can do that by being out there and sort of chatting them to myself, then great. But no, a big part of it is just to get to know who our tenants are and what challenges they're facing as a business sometimes, because they're all different sizes. Some have got staff, some haven't, but they've all got their own challenges. And I think it's been aware on a wider picture for us as the workshop is how we can do things to perhaps help them, or you just don't know who you're going to talk to, and I
or
think
indeed what you're going to learn.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them that have perhaps got skills that they're missing out on, but don't know who to go to help improve that. So yeah, that's kind of, for me, is now helping to set up a program of events, so almost like I've got staff, but it's doing it for other businesses rather than employees as such. So yeah, it's wanting to put workshops on and get outside speakers in if we haven't got anyone in the building that can do it, that, yeah, can offer some real basic hands-on practical advice to businesses. Well, this is a joy, isn't
sign
it?
Me it's up, like, Lisa, sign me up.
We've got a huge array of business types at the workshop, but we've also got a lot that we don't have in there. So yeah, it's then about reaching out to contacts that you know are really good and have got really good stuff to say, that can come in and, yeah, put a workshop on for 10 people, and it could be about anything.
Like a lunchtime lecture style thing.
Yeah, and we're trying different things. We've got tenant coffee mornings that we've started that are going really well once a month. But yeah, this is the next one. It's like, okay, let's try something at a different time of day. But something they can, and it's not being time consuming. I think that's key at the moment. So it's literally like, yeah, whatever it is, it's like a good hour and it can be full on, but it's not so too much time out of their day. But if they can come along and get some nuggets of info, yeah, brilliant. So yeah, it's all
just,
of that.
Just on the individual, the one-to-one one-on-ones, if you would.
Yeah.
So coming from the construction industry, I know because I have these sorts of conversations all the time. There are a significant number of managers out there who would be absolutely petrified to instigate a regime of one-to-ones in case they ended up in a conversation with one of their people that made them incredibly uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh. Like if people talking to people, involved. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
But seriously, it's I mean, it I won't even go down the road of, and what if a guy was having a one-to-one with one of his people who happened to be a woman? Like, oh my God. I know leaders and managers, and that would just freak them out. And so I know a lot of people who actively avoid them because they're terrified that they might end up in a situation where somebody reveals something personal to them and they just don't know what to do with it. I mean,
but is this thoughts. Where this is where I've got a bit of a thing about leaders and stuff coming up, is where people have been somewhere for a long time and the job comes up and they get it. But as a leader, so they get the title of leader or manager, but they're not supported with any training behind that. So coming up against something like not doing a one-to-one, I think sometimes maybe it's just perhaps a lack of, they've not been given any training themselves on how to do that stuff because they're just put into a job. They think, oh, you know the job, you've been there. But actually the leadership skills that come with that is massive. And I don't think, I think there's a real gap that, there's a lot of people out there that don't have sufficient training to be a leader.
Yeah. Well, I put a tweet out yesterday about how important is EQ and emotional intelligence in management. Do we value it? Do we put it as a key role requirement that somebody has a level of emotional maturity? Because I see it a lot in my industry where I don't want to absolutely destroy everybody within the construction industry. There's some incredibly emotionally intelligent people, but the majority ain't. And the majority of middle-aged men in the construction industry can't deal with their emotions. Their emotional development was stopped quite early on. Me being one of them, but I'm on a journey to re-engage that side of myself. But there's a lot of people, like, when we look at promoting people into management positions, we do this a lot. We say, you're very good at doing the task, we're going to make you the person who's going to manage the team that's doing the task. But we don't look at, okay, it's a totally different dynamic now. The key part of your role is to manage your people. And so, do you have the necessary skills, emotional intelligence being key, to be able to build relationships with your people to get the performance from them that you need to meet the organisational objectives?
I think you do see it. I mean, the organisations I tend to work with are local government, mainly public sector organisations, social housing and hospitals. And I see it time and time again where people have been promoted because they're technically competent, but they're not people competent. And it doesn't just happen in the construction industry where those leaders, those managers want to shy away from having the real difficult conversations, which is understanding human behaviour, how you engage people, how you motivate people, how you deal with people that are falling behind. The people aren't necessarily having the opportunities to display their strengths in the workplace. and mental health, the stuff that's going on behind the scenes for that individual, and they shy away from it. And that's then where you start getting issues with grievances being raised, staff being accusing their managers of bullying and harassment, because the manager's got into a situation where, I just don't know what to do with this person. So they then put in some really strict, rigorous ways of managing them. And actually, if they just had a really deep, meaningful conversation with around what's going on for that person, they could have found the core of it and dealt with it.
And I think you've just got to admit as well, if something comes up that you just don't know what to do with, you've just got to be honest. Because I even have it with my child now. I say child, he's 17. But he'll come out with stuff sometimes, and I just have to be as honest with him and say, I've got no idea what to do about that right now, but let's look into it together. Mm. Or you go and find the help you need. And I think, especially with companies, I think this is where a lot of them don't outsource and need to, because there's good people doing a lot of that stuff, like especially now with the wellbeing packages, and they're to support in corporate organisations. And I think just that's where you've got to go and get the help in. If you don't know it, be honest, but make the promise to get the help that's needed and bring that in.
Well, they don't create, the organisation hasn't created a culture where it's okay to say, I don't know. Where it's okay as a leader to say, I don't know what to do with this information. Because I know a fair few organisations, mainly in the private sector, that if you was to turn around and say, I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that, let's go and find it out together, the individual employee would be making a judgment on that manager for not knowing the answers, and the organisation would be making a judgment on that manager for not knowing the answers. And I think in this position that you're in as a leader or a manager, there's so much judgment of what you should know, how you should be going about things. And actually, if we don't have conversations with leaders to say, okay, what do we need to do to help guide and support you so that you feel you're adequately prepared for this information, and create a safe space for them to say, hands up, I don't know this, then I just don't think leadership and management will continue to grow into the 21st century. I think you'll be stuck in this kind of almost negative persecution of, you should have all the answers, but you don't.
Yeah, my experience as a project manager, when I first started in project management, it kind of went to my head a little bit, and I thought, oh my God, I've made it, I'm a project manager now, and it's all on me, and I make all the decisions. And very, very quickly I realised that, number one, you can't do it all yourself. You end up a bottleneck. You absolutely can't know everything, and if you think you do, you've got problems. What you need to be doing is surrounding yourself with a good, strong team of specialists. And you need to challenge and inspire those specialists to be able to come up with creative solutions to problems. Ultimately, you hold the decision making. But if you think that you're going to make a decision on every single aspect of a project just from within your own head, you're going to fail. And that's the reality of it. And that's what happens a lot with major construction projects, because they're almost like they're very hierarchical. And I even find it now sometimes, like on a couple of jobs that I'm doing, people will look at me and go, we need to make a decision, you're the project manager. And I'm like, okay, so give me all the facts. Well, you're the project manager. You know it all. No, I don't. So you're the expert, you're the subject matter expert. You tell me the facts and what you think are the options. And then we'll talk about decisions. And ultimately, yes, I'll carry the decision and I will take the accountability for that, but I will do it from an informed position rather than sitting there thinking that I have to show strength and leadership by just making all the decisions. Because that ends up with groupthink. And how often have we seen that with organizations where there's been a massive failing, and in the forensic analysis that takes place afterwards, it's found that there was a let's not say use the word leader, there was an iconic figure at the top, and they made all the decisions and they weren't challenged and they weren't particularly interested in hearing other people's opinions. And that's a trap that you can very easily fall into. So there's an element of needing to be self-aware there as well. And part of that self-awareness comes from having individual conversations with people. And just on the whole, I can't deal with emotional conversations, if you can't have a conversation with somebody about something that's troubling them in their life, if they want to share that with you, how successful do you think you'll be if you're having a performance management conversation with that person? And that's why I think a lot of organizations, when it gets to performance management, a huge big machine kicks in to almost tie the manager down to make sure that they don't make a mistake, because we ultimately don't trust our managers, maybe for very good reasons, to always be able to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think possibly, you know, when it's down to performance management, maybe that can be more sort of data driven, because they like the analytics and getting that kind of overall picture, and then missing out the fact that you've actually got these individual human beings forming, you know, numbers 176, 177, and so on in the company. And possibly it's just that maybe, you know, tradition or habit that means that companies, organizations, and leaders and managers, you know, operate in a certain way, and they're just not that sort of open to change, or not aware that they can actually do things differently because this is the way we've done it.
And isn't that important, Gary? Don't we all, if we're working in an organization, don't we all need to feel that our at least our manager, if not the overarching company, but at least our direct manager is interested in us as human beings, realizes that we are human beings, is interested in understanding our opinions and thoughts, is willing to listen and even make changes based on the things we talk about? Because if people are coming into work every day just thinking, I just need to perform a role and nobody's really interested in anything I've got to say or anything I've got to think, when it then comes down to an opportunity to move somewhere else, they're going to base that on a price points decision, because there's nothing else that's really going to keep them in that organization, right? Whereas if they feel engaged and part of the organization or part of their team within the organization, then that decision becomes a lot more difficult, because it breeds loyalty and engagement, and you feel invested in it because they feel invested in you. So I guess as well, you know, it really comes to the fore when there is an existential crisis to either the team or the organization, and the organization needs to show some resilience. And that might be So I've worked in organizations before where we've been doing bids and it's like a deadline and you're maybe pulling a 20-hour day in the last couple of days to get it all done. And in some organizations, I've seen people at 5 o'clock in the evening will just pack up and walk out the door because they reflect how the organization treats them. Whereas I've seen other scenarios where they're like, without even questioning, they're like, yeah, we'll just get the pizzas in and we'll pull an all-nighter because we're all in this, we're all invested in winning this piece of work or whatever it might be. And that has fed through from how they're treated, and one-on-ones is a vital part of those organizations' toolboxes.
I was just reflecting on what both Ray and Gary were saying, and I was thinking about a one-to-one that I had with a member of my staff when I first joined an organization that I worked for about 4 years ago. I was going in as the head of organisational development, and I had an L&D advisor working for me. And I didn't really know much about her at all, but I thought I need to understand a bit more around who she is and what she thinks she contributes to the role, so that I can start carving some work for her that plays to her strengths and what excites her and engages her. And I'd already seen that she was high performing just by the level of work she was doing before I arrived. And one of the questions I asked her was, what do you think you are good at? And she looked at me almost with tears in her eyes and said, I don't really think I'm good at anything. And I said, no, you must be good at something. Share with me what you think you're good at. And she said, okay, well, I think I'm good at doing my nails. And I had this sinking feeling in my stomach when she said that, because I thought, she doesn't understand how good she is at what she does. And by asking that question, it completely shaped the focus of my one-to-ones with her moving forward, because I thought, what she needs is positive reinforcement from me that she's doing some really great work. I need her to understand how to evaluate her own work so she can give me good feedback on what she thinks she's doing really well. and realised there was a real lack of self-confidence in how she felt she was putting herself out to the organisation. And that almost became my project with her over the next 4 years that I worked with her to build her self-esteem. So much so that she then went from being an L&D advisor to an L&D manager and now is a very senior manager as an L&D capacity, learning development, within the construction industry actually, Ray. And I think if I hadn't asked that question the first time I met her, whether I would have picked that up quickly enough to help cultivate that. Now, I'm not saying that I'm responsible for her career, because I'm absolutely not, but I wonder what things may have been left over for her had we not have had opportunities to have those discussions. And I think going back to what Ray was saying about how we need to ask those almost braver questions in one-to-ones to understand the real people behind the individual, that's when you find out the people that are willing to stay, that are willing to go that extra mile. That's how you cultivate that, because I know from having spoken to that member of staff who I'm still very good friends with now and has been my rising star since the day I met her, she would have done anything for me in that scenario and anything for the organisation in that scenario, because she felt like actually somebody wants to get to know the real me. But other people that I have seen in the organisation would have easily have been that, nope, 5:30, shut down, off I go. And I think it is about that intimacy you have in a one-to-one relationship starts to build that attitude, starts to build that behaviour. And even if the organisation's culture doesn't fit that, you as a leader create your own culture. And I think that's the key thing that is happening within these one-to-ones. Who am I as a leader? Who do I want you to see me as a leader? And how can I engage you in the culture that I'm trying to grow, rather than necessarily that being of the organisation, if that contradicts that.
So that's it for this week, folks. Listen, we'd love to hear your thoughts, your opinions, your challenges. You can email the podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. Before we go, does anybody have anything additionally they'd like to add, either personally, professionally, or anything like that? No,
I don't think so. Just say in March, hopefully at some point the mini documentary will be out.
Woohoo! Woo!
Is that the documentary featuring myself?
That's the one about the main event of TEDx Folkestone 2019.
I think they're almost all there, aren't they?
So the others are in progress.
Yeah.
Just so people know the reference there, Sophie did a TEDx Folkestone talk back in 2018.
Yeah.
And you can find that on YouTube. In fact, we'll probably stick a link to it on the notes for this show. Mm. Yeah, really, really interesting topic as well. And I'm sure we will talk about that in the not too distant future as well. Anyway, thank you, folks, for listening. It's been wonderful. Thank you guys for joining us here in the Hub. And we will catch you very shortly. Goodbye. Just so incredible, gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction.